Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to the No Chaser Show. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 if you'd like to speak to me, who I happen to be JT, the co-host of the No Chaser Show. And without further ado, let's bring in my host of this show, Mac Williams. Welcome, Mac.
Hey, what's happening, man? How you doing?
All right.
Great. How's your week been?
My week's been very busy, man. As you know, that we got hard hit by the storm. So there's been a lot of restoration being going on in my type of business. People need communication, and I happen to be in the communication business. So
what exactly do you do? I never asked that.
I install and maintain telephone systems and also computer networks.
Get out of here. I didn't know that. Is that you? Is that your business, or is that working for someone else?
Well, I subcontract to somebody, but it's a steady thing. So I'm working for the guy, but I'm in for myself. Let me put it that way.
Okay, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Subcontractor, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, he backs you to a certain degree, but the business, getting the business and all that is kind of like your baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got you. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've had an interesting and busy week.
What you been up to?
Started a new little space today, a little blog. Called MacWilliams.me. I think I sent it to you, Vic, and Mike, the Black. And it's just a place I kind of created that I could get away from, not get away from, but be, I mean, I can still say things and do things on Facebook, but a place where people don't get so offended or so crazy. So I can talk about, can basically say some things, lay them out. People can read it. If you read it, you like it, you don't. That's fine. That's cool. Not that I don't like comments, but it just gets to a point where certain people just always have to comment every time. Like, do you guys just sit and lay in the weeds and wait till I put something up there just so you can say something? Sometimes kind of crazy. So I created a space where I could, a blog where I could put what I wanted, talk about some of the things I want to talk about instead of kind of bloviating long, because Facebook is cool, but it's kind of not meant for long, drawn-out discussions or long things, so I just kind of created that. So I've been doing that and, just working from home pretty much. And that's it. But I started that, the blog is also good because it gives me something to talk about on Fridays. Not that I didn't have anything to talk about on Fridays, but I can kind of pick up on those things and kind of gives me a chance to really think it through and think about it and plan what I want to talk about today. So, one of the things I did, it was something I wanted to ask you about. One of the things I wanted to talk about, the first thing I wanted to try to top off with is, first of all, talk about this Mike Brown and Mike D'Antoni hiring of the Lakers, and I'll ask you: what are your thoughts as far as Mike D'Antoni being the new Laker coach and how it went down? I'm interested in hearing what you think.
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I think he used to, quite naturally, he used to be coach of the Knicks, Mm-hmm. And that turned out to be, in my opinion, was a fiasco. Mm-hmm. And I feel that it's going to be the same thing with the Lakers. The whole organization, headed by Jim Buss, basically, the son of Jerry Buss. Mm-hmm. Jim Buss has got supposedly some personality issues throughout the league and doesn't get along with Phil Jackson and didn't want any part of Phil Jackson coming back. So he has second thoughts, and at fallback was Mike D'Antoni,
mm-hmm.
Who preaches offense and basically no defense. So I'm not a D'Antoni fan. I never have been. Didn't like him when he came to the Knicks because I knew all he would preach is offense, and that's why Goodson was there to give him some defensive philosophy versus what he preached. I think it's going to be the same time frame of Mike Brown, one and done. I really believe that.
I don't know if you read my blog today, but I put on there today. I wrote a blog piece about the D'Antoni thing, and I basically said that I thought it was going to be. I said basically I thought it was going to be 2 years, this year, and by next year, it'll be done. I think he, in a lot of ways, is like he's like Mike Brown. When he's the guy you get. When you're really holding the spot for the guy you really want.
Mm-hmm.
And I only believe he'll take you only so far. I also said in my blog that I like Mike Brown. I thought he was a good guy, but I think he just got and here's the interesting thing I said, and I know so this will probably be controversial to some people. It'll probably be blasphemous. But, you know, I think that, and this is just me, I think that Phil Jackson is a lot like Mike Brown in the fact that both coaches inherited great players at certain times. The difference between Mike Brown and Phil Jackson is that Phil Jackson is a master with personalities, whereas and Brown is not a master of personalities nor anything else. But what I mean by that is Phil Jackson, I think the difference with Phil Jackson is a very fortunate man because everywhere he's went, he's had something there for him. He's never had to build anything from scratch. I would be interested to see Phil Jackson go to Charlotte or go somewhere where they don't have nothing and make something out of it, because I think coaches who come from – I give more respect to coaches who build something – who are there when they lay the groundwork and earn and get it that way, than to come into a ready-made situation where I have all the food, I have all the groceries, I just need to know how to cook the meal.
Well,
so that's just my philosophy on that. But
I beg to differ on that. You know, I'm pretty sure you do. I think Phil Jackson's a heck of a coach. You have to be a great coach to be able to deal with strong personalities, especially superstar personalities.
Exactly.
So you have to be a great coach to be able to have that strong personality, that superstar buy into what you want to do because if your superstar buys in, the whole team has to buy in.
And I give you that. That's why the key thing I told you when I said that was I said I think Phil Jackson's greatest gift, the greatest thing about him is that he knows how to deal with personalities. So what you're saying is what I'm saying. He is good at. I mean, he's a master at it. That's why they call him the Zen master. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he is good at that. But I don't think. But I've never. I can't say he's a great X's and O's. And I can't say he's a fundamental guy because
Ooh.
I've never seen him take I'll give you an example. Larry Brown took AI when he first came into the league. He was very rough diamond. They had a lot of conflict, but that was because he was an X and O's guy and he was a fundamental guy. He's a gym rat. He goes in the gym and actually teach you, no, take these shots. You do this. He's a very – everybody who's dealt with Larry Brown has always said he's a great X's and O's. He's a gym rat. He's a coach. He will actually not only convince you, but he'll rub you the wrong way, and he can take you a rough guy and make him into a superstar and make him into something that he wasn't when he first came. I've never seen Phil Jackson do that. I've seen Phil Jackson
really?
Take guys that are ready made, that are already at a certain point, and then you put it. Because look at it. When he came, Phil Collins, whatever his name is, I can't remember his name. You know what I'm talking about. The guy who's a Philly coach now. When he took the Bulls, he was there at the beginning when Michael got drafted. He was the one who brought him to a certain extent. Then Phil comes in and takes over, but the team was pretty much where, you know, already he had the groceries. He didn't have to build. So if you think about it, and this is not a put down on Phil, because I give more credit to him in dealing with the personalities of those superstars. Think about it. He's had one, two, three, at least three superstars. He's had Jordan, who's probably what we all regard as one of the greatest NBA players ever. Then you come along and get Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, and you get two of those superstars with egos to play together and win two more championships. So don't get me wrong. I give it to him, but what I'm saying is I've never seen him take a guy like an Iverson or take a guy who's a rough guy and make him into something. I give you one more example. I tell you who I like, Calipari. He's that kind of coach. He's going to get in your face. He's going to hurt your feelings, but he wants you to do it. But he's going to do it for your good. He's going to get in there and be a gym rat and work you out and tell you, look, you're not doing it right. That's not cool. If you ain't going to do it right, I'm going to make you. I mean, when I saw that open, which I already kind of knew he was that way, because to me the mark of a great coach is when you have superstars in college or just starting and they have conflict with you. That means you're rubbing them the wrong way. That means you're not stroking their ego. You're rubbing them the wrong way because you're working, you're doing something, as opposed to you're already set and now I just have to play mental games with you and get you to do what I want you to do and get you to buy in, which is fine. For me, I respect coaches that are gym rats and going to go in and teach you something and rub you the wrong way to get the best out of you, as opposed to I got to deal with all you guys' personalities, and I need to get you to do all that. Don't get me wrong. I don't take a guy who can get, you know, if you can get somebody to buy in, especially in the NBA, I mean, you're doing a great job. You know, Popovich is one of those guys. But, see, Popovich actually is like the other two I told you. So,
yeah.
For me, I just think Phil Jackson has been very fortunate. He's been at the right place at the right time, and he's always had superstars. He's always had the ingredients to do what he had to do, and then all he did was really step in and come up with an offensive philosophy a little bit and that. But he's not a guy who's going to sit in the gym and rub you the wrong way and get you to and create something. And to me, I like somebody to create something out of nothing as opposed to the other way. So that's just a side note. But
11 championships. I mean, 11 championships.
Yeah, but you give me that. But you give me those. You give me those same teams. You give anybody those same teams. You gonna get. You might not get 11, but you gonna get a bunch. I mean, come on, man. How often do you come up with a guy Michael Jordan? Nobody comes with a Michael Jordan. That's why I said Mike Brown got fortunate, and that's what propelled him was because of LeBron. Because LeBron happened to come into a situation with a superstar guy. The only reason why Mike Brown didn't ride the same wave as Phil Jackson is probably because the franchise, not his fault, the franchise didn't give him enough players, didn't give him enough talent around him. Even though I tend to think that LeBron, if LeBron had stayed, I think if they had kept making small adjustments, they had a team that could have won. Because that same team, people always irritate me when they tell me, you know, LeBron's team was some crap. And I'm like,
no,
yeah,
it wasn't.
Right, and that's what I keep trying to tell people. I'm like, y'all keep saying that it was some crap. It wasn't. I said, remember, they went to the championship. So it wasn't like they were some bums. I said, okay, Detroit went to the championship. Detroit built it from the ground up. I said, but Detroit kept making adjustments, kept making trades in the offseason until they got the right mix of guys to get them over the hump. When we got Mark Aguirre, that put us over the hump. And then we went on to, when we got rid of Adrian Dantley, as wrong as it might have been, we got rid of Adrian, got Mark Aguirre, a score. We brought him in, we went out, we won the championship. And then we came back again the next year and made adjustments and won again. So what I always tell people is that team wasn't no bum team. It's just the fact that LeBron just saw bigger lights and bigger pictures somewhere else and didn't want to keep being a franchise guy. He wanted help, and that's fine. So, you know, like I said, I agree with you as far as the guy is talented. Don't get me wrong, 11 championships, I'm not going to sit and say that's, you know, that's not, that's a fluke, because it's not. But at the same time, I think it was due more to the talents that you say he has, which is dealing with big egos and getting them to buy in, as opposed to X's and O's and actually getting in the gym and being there, you know. So I just think it was just easier for him. We'll just put it that way. But I do agree with what you said. You know, I do think that Mike Brown was gone, and I don't think he's as good as everybody thought he was. I think LeBron fooled a lot of – I mean, because he was with LeBron, it fooled people into thinking he was something that he wasn't. I was never impressed with him because I never thought he was a great coach. Mike D'Antoni, I put in my article today that one of the key statements, and I don't know if you read it or heard it in his press conference, but that he said – he basically said – we're going to be a bear on defense. And the key word was he said, until we get going, until we get clicking, we'll be leaning on our defense or something to that effect. And I put that in my article, and I said, that shows me that's why he's not going to last. He's not going to last because defense, he doesn't hang his hat on defense. So I agree with everything you said, and I put that in there. So I said I think it'll be 2 years. I think it'll be this year he'll be fine. Next year, I think this year they'll get – you know what I think is going to happen? They're going to get there, fall short, come back next year. It'll either be an early out or they'll fall short again, and then that's when they'll make the change and go get the guy who they want. Who that guy is, I don't know. But I think – but I agree with you. I think 2 years. You say one and done. I say a year, because they're excited right now, and they'll give him a chance because, you know, they want to prove, they're going to prove the point. You know, they want to prove the point. So unless a Greg Popovich, or unless I tell you who I think would have been a great coach for him, honestly, Utah Jazz's former coach.
Who, Jerry Sloan?
Yep.
I don't know about that. I think he's a little rough around the edges.
No, he's rough around it, but for
LA.
Right, but that goes again. But see, remember, but that tells me a lot. But then that tells me a lot about what you said is Jerry Buss's son or whatever. Because if you're a type of person that wants to win, you take a guy like Jerry Sloan. Jerry Sloan's a tough guy. And the one thing you can say about Jerry Sloan is they play great offense, but they play pick and roll, but they play great defense.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to play defense. So I'm just saying that would have been, I think, a good pick, even though the personality may have rubbed people the wrong way. But at the same time, what could you say? Who wouldn't respect him on the Lakers team? I mean, he had the best 1-2 combo in the league, and went to a championship. I mean, even went there, but you know, it's not like this guy was a bum. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
season. So it wasn't like he would have. Right.
His teams were a perennial power in the Western Conference. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Right. So that's why I said he wouldn't have walked in like, oh, who the hell are you? You
right.
know, it'd have been like, oh, Jerry Sloan. Like, we know I ain't playing with him. And guess what? Kobe, I don't think, would have had a problem with Sloan because he likes tough coaches. He don't like somebody that kisses his tail. He'd rather have a guy that's going to – all Kobe care about is winning. And if the defense is winning games, he can live with it. You know, damn the offense. That's what I think. So right now – everybody's excited about him, but, you know, as I said, you know, I think that'll, like you said, it'll be 2 years. So, but one of the things that really got me today and bothered me today is two things. And I figured today I thought about if I was going to bring it up, and I said, you know what, I'm going to bring it up. Because I think you're a good person to talk to about it, and you'll bring a perspective to it is, one, I'm pissed off because Hostess is closing. I know that sounds funny, but I am. I grew up on that stuff. Come on, we nostalgic guys, and I'm just like, really? Really?
Yeah, you're right, man.
And mm-hmm. I'm kind of pissed off about that. I'm sad about it, hoping and praying that one of these other, which I'm pretty sure, if I had to bet on it, I would bet on it, that one of these other cake companies or bakeries will pick, you know, Hostess stuff up and take them and continue to have them. I hope they do. You know, Wonder Bread, I'm not really worried about Wonder Bread, even though that's what I grew up on. But, you know, the snacks are the thing I just, I mean, that was my, I mean, I was, man, I had one of them in my lunch like every day, man. I was like, man, that was the bomb, man.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like a Twinkie. And, you know, I just think it's an example, again, of just, you know, I mean, you know, unions, you know, it goes to my point, like I said, I think unions were good to a certain extent, and I think that time is over. I just think they just suck the blood out of businesses and out of things, and it's just,
why,
I mean, it's
why
just
do
ridiculous.
Why do you think unions' time has passed?
Because I don't think we're in those same. When the union started, I could understand. I read the stories. I've heard the stories of unions, stuff like that. But I think it's morphed into something else. I think the unions are not about. It's not about the people. Now it's about power, control, and running things. And it's about, you know, money. Do I? Here's my point. Do I believe that they care about the people getting high wages and stuff? Sure. Do I believe they think about people's, you know, working conditions? Yeah. But let's be honest. Working conditions and pay, I mean, businesses, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying businesses don't take advantage and don't do that. I mean, businesses lay people off every day. People, you know, businesses do things for the bottom line just like, you know, they do. But what I'm finding is that, but when you keep renegotiating contracts and you're asking for more and more and more and more, I have a problem with that. I have a problem with a union that says, give me, pay your dues every month. But then when we go on strike, you're not paying my bills. You're not digging out for my family. You're not taking care of my thing. Because let's be honest, Hostess is going to shut down and 18,000 people are going to lose their jobs. I don't see the union stepping in and taking care of none of their bills. I don't see the union coming in and saying, you know what? We're going to take care of you guys. You know, we're going to try to go out and find all you guys jobs. That's not going to happen. So for me, I'm just saying in the end, what they do is they push and they push and they push and they push, and then they say, we're not going any further. But to me, I think there's a certain point where you have to say, you know what, to keep these people employed, okay, we'll go ahead and do this. You know, or you make a deal to say, look, we'll accept the cut, we'll do this to keep people employed, and we work it out later, or we work it out down the line, or what have you. If you have grievances, if you have problems with that, okay, then use that union money and go take them guys, take the business to court and show you and prove that they're not doing it, or prove or get a judge to come behind you. But to just forcefully keep people walking off jobs, and now we have people laid off. And those 18,000 people, okay, go ahead and be pro-union. But to me, it's stupid because now you have no job. And of course, now they're talking trash like, well, I get paid more, you know, off unemployment. Okay, well, what happens when that runs out? What happens if you don't get a job? You've been doing this all your life. What if you can't find another job? What are you going to do then?
So the company has also been accused of financial and operational mismanagement. I'm reading this article that you got on your blog.
No, you're right.
You're
right. And you know what? And the thing about it is, the guy admitted that coming out of bankruptcy, they made some, you know, tough decisions. They made some decisions that got him in trouble too. But I guess what I'm trying to say to you is, what I'm saying to you is, you can address that if that's the case, but do it through court, do it through something else. If you really care about the workers, then get the workers to then keep the workers' jobs. If that's what you say, since y'all say that's what you're for. And then you go back or take them to court and work them and say, look, they made some bad decisions. They did this. Show it in court. You know, or work it out some way. But I'm just saying 18,000 people, that's nuts. I mean, what do you say to somebody?
What I'm saying is this, and I'm looking at, like I said, looking at your article
mm-hmm.
on here, and
mm-hmm.
the last sentence on your article is that they had already reached a pay and benefits cut with Brotherhood of Teamsters, which was its largest union.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying, I understand what you're saying. But most unions see that if a company is not financially sound or
mm-hmm.
are willing to make concessions in order to keep their union workers jobs and to be able to help the company
mm-hmm.
Stay afloat.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like to me.
But remember that's one union out of a few of them that deal with those. So that wasn't the only one. There were other unions that's what they told them Thursday, said, if you don't go with it, we're not doing it because we can't do this anymore. You know, well, we can't withstand it.
This is a day and age because, and this is the slippery slope that happens, Mac. In this day and age, if you if you notice, a lot of companies are trying to strong arm unions to make concessions because of the economic climate. And I can name three entities that have locked players out. Players unions have locked players out to get concessions. When each one of those entities, baseball, excuse me, basketball, football, and now hockey, are making billions of dollars, but they still want concessions. Now, and that's the problem with absolute power corrupts absolutely, in my mind. And that's the reason why you got to have a union to protect yourself. Now, I know these guys, it's a different perspective versus somebody who's
I understand what you're saying.
Regular 9-to-5 job versus versus a guy who's making millions of dollars.
Millionaires and billionaires,
But the concept I'm saying is these companies, some of these companies, not all of them, some of them are have fair management that deal with unions fairly. And there's other companies that like to strong arm and take advantage of workers in this type of climate when it's not necessary. And you got to weigh it both ways. Unions built this country for a long time. I understand that the way the economic climate is, there's a lot of companies and unions that are making concessions with each other to work through this type of economic environment.
Well, let me.
But.
Go ahead. But.
But. My problem is a company like this says take it or leave it. It's you got to see whether it's a truthful thing that they're coming up with, or it's just because of their mismanagement and them not doing the right things as being the head of the company and being able to garner sales and deal with the financial things in the company, and now the workers have to suffer for it. I don't feel that's right.
No, I understand you don't feel that's right, but one of the things I've always said to people is this: when you're in business, you take risks. All risks don't work. All things you try to do don't work, and you come out of bankruptcy. You try to do other things to try to make money. You try to do things you know, and guess what? Mishandling happens. Sometimes it happens in business where you make bad decisions and you pay for it, and that's fine. But we all knew for years that this was not a company that can just sit and withstand it. Most companies, this is the first time I've ever heard of a company just saying, like, look, y'all don't do it, we're shutting it down. But I knew why, because I knew they were kind of, everything with them was kind of rough. So I knew that. But what I will say to you is this. If they're about the people, and they're about protecting workers, and I prove my point. The reason why I think unions are have morphed into something else, and I don't think they're about the worker, is because, you mark my word, in these next 4 years, the union is going to try to get it to where they don't have no more right to work states, because they want everybody to be union.
That's not going to happen. Because all these, for the most part, all these right to work states are Republican states, and for the most part, that's not going to change.
So. I don't put nothing past anybody when you got union people or they first in line at the White House after the election. I don't put that past nobody. All I'm saying to you is that I'm saying that alone is enough. I mean, you got teachers in Chicago making $72,000 a year and got extraordinary benefits. When I see the benefits of these union places that had this stuff, and I'm like, this is crazy. The same thing with the guy in Wisconsin. When he cut it, they flipped out. My thing is, because he did that, but it wasn't like these people were going to lose everything. They're talking about just cutting something. So my stance on unions is this. I just think it there was a purpose for it when it first started for years, many years. I think what it's done now is it's trying to get political clout. It's trying to run things.
Stop, man. Come on. I can't believe you saying that.
I cannot believe you saying that. Wait a minute. You got to remember, I'm a kid who grew up with family in Detroit.
Right.
Born and raised. I watched what they did.
Okay.
I watch people not be able to pay their bills because they decide for 6 months you go out in the wintertime and sit out there and you ain't making no money and you sitting outside voting for that. I'm looking at my relatives like, y'all stupid. As a kid, I'm looking at this like, y'all stupid. Like, y'all can't pay y'all bills. Y'all do, and y'all listen to these dumb dudes, and these dudes ain't doing nothing for you. I'm sorry. I just see it different. I just see it differently. Now, was I happy with the fact that they made good money and they were doing a job and they were doing it? Of course I do. But the only thing I don't agree, but like I said, what they are now is I think they just suck the life out. They just ask for more and more and more and more, and they break businesses and they suck the life out of business. That's what I really think.
Well,
I'm not saying in every case.
I understand the mindset that you have. So I understand why you say that. Because I have a different perspective on it, and
right.
I used to be a union worker, so mm-hmm. I understand exactly.
I've been too, and I understand because I had to be, and I've understood. And there are some good things about it, things like that. But I guess the thing that I have a problem with is that I watch Detroit every 3 or 4 years have this big knockdown drag out fight between the UAW and freaking Ford Motors. And it was like every year, and it was like, Jesus, these guys come back, and now they want more stuff for the work. I'm like, does it ever end? Like, dude, you guys are bringing up. I remember when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, my uncle was bringing home, what, $1,000 or more or whatever, some outrageous amount of money, whatever, per week, every freaking Friday. Had
right.
great benefits, had everything. And then
right.
it's like every 4 years, okay, the contract expires, now we want more. And it's like, Jesus Christ, it's like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is not, like you go through, put it like this, I had to go through watching family members and watching people sit every 4 years and go through this stupid shit. Standing outside in the winter or in the summer or whatever, missing work, for going on for like 2, 3, 4 months, not getting paid, getting behind on your payments, all this other stuff, and then you get all this money, then you got to work to pay all this crap back. Like, that's what that's the side people don't see. They don't. All they see is the workers want the money. Yeah. That's what people who don't know about union or see it on TV think. Oh, they just getting more money and they this that. And I'm like, yeah, they are. I was like, yeah, but y'all don't see the crap they go through. Like basically, it's like, to me, it's like a guy saying, yo, I'm going to protect you, Jerry. I'm going to protect you. But in order to protect you, you're going to have to pay me to protect. This is a mafia thing. You pay me, I'm going to protect you. And if I tell you, wait a minute. And if I tell you, you have to, wait a minute. And you don't have no choice but to go out on strike if I decide I don't like these dudes. If I don't like what they're doing, you and all them people, y'all going to go out on the street and y'all going to strike and put your signs and you better not cross that line.
The deal is this. Okay. Now we'll take, for example, that you sit in Detroit and the auto industry. Auto
mm-hmm.
industry is making money hands over fist.
I get you. Okay. That.
Wait a minute. Making hands over fist. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the only reason they're making hands over fist because their workers are producing at a high rate
mm-hmm.
and pushing out a product, and the product's getting sold and people are buying that product.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're making more money, why can't the workers make more money? Because they're the driving force of the company making that money. You understand what I'm saying?
No,
so,
I understand what you're saying. Let's call it this way. The reason why they were making so much money is because it was automated, and they went in. And yes, the workers did have a lot to do with it, but it wasn't like it was no faster because of them. Because what nobody else remembers is I remember. And my mother can tell you, I remember when they were making some shit cars. I remember when they were putting crap in the cars and weren't making the crap right. And they was turning out crappy cars and weren't doing right and stuff like that. And I'm talking about the company and them. And turning out crappy cars that didn't last and things like that. So all I'm saying to you is I agree. Let me rephrase what I said. I agree with what you're saying. But here's my stance on it. The unions have outgrown their usefulness. I think all they do is they suck the life out of businesses. That's what I think they do.
You need unions more now at this time than you really need them at maybe 10 years ago. For the simple fact is the way that companies are trying to cut costs or make more money or keep the upper echelon of the company is trying to keep more money and give the worker less money. I know you know that the mm-hmm. average person that used to make, say they're making $50,000 a few years ago, maybe 10 mm-hmm. years ago, mm-hmm. that $50,000 ain't going, it's not lasting. In fact, the percentage of, and I hate to, I wish I had the statistics, but the percentage mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. wages that have gone up over the years has mm-hmm. dwindled from mm-hmm. year to year to year.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
so the average worker, in fact, the average union worker, is getting a lower percentage of a pay increase over the years, even before the economy went sour.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying, I understand mm-hmm. what you're saying, but the premise is that the average American worker, especially if he's in a union, is not making a hands over foot fist type of money. In fact, he's making a lower percentage of money to go with inflation. So I mean,
yeah. But for every one of those you're saying, you look at the people that I've been seeing on TV and been reported on, and some of these people have like exorbitant salaries. When you look at the salaries and you look at the benefits, you're talking about like slim. You're talking about over like 150 G's. Like some of these people, like I said, the people in Chicago, the teachers are making $72,000 a year. Not saying they shouldn't, but then when you look at the benefits, that's another. I mean, that's ridiculous. I'm not saying they shouldn't be making. If you can get it, get it. I'm not beyond all that. But when you look at the unions all around this, I'm saying when you look at the unions all around the area, all around this country, there are a lot of unions that are misused. You can't even have these places. You can't even fire bad people that need to go because the unions stand behind them so much. It's a dog and pony show trying to get these guys out of here and things. I've read those stories. I've seen that. So let me say it this way. There are unions that are bad, and there are unions that are good. But for me, overall, I don't like unions. I think unions are. I don't work in a deplorable. When I was in a union, I wasn't working in a deplorable situation. My worker wasn't sending me home and doing shady stuff to me. What I'm saying is, I don't think we need. I think that's fine that they're here, and they're useful. That's fine. But what I find is that they're greedy. They're greedy entities. And I mean, look at how much power they wielded during the election. I mean, when they started out, they were never doing that.
Sure, they
now,
were.
Now,
absolutely. Are you
sure?
You gotta be kidding me.
What I'm saying is the influence they have now is nowhere close to what it was when I was a kid. Not now.
Are you kidding me?
No, I don't think so.
They're spending
billions of dollars now. When they were back in the day, you spend a few million, but the clout that they have now, they're much more powerful now than they were back in the day. In the 70s, 80s, way powerful now. They are. But I don't have a statistic to back it up. But I'm sure. Trust me, I've never seen this. Maybe I just missed the whole decade. I don't know. But I mean, I know they've always been powerful. Don't get me wrong, because when you can make Jimmy Hoffa disappear, trust me, you're pretty damn powerful. Them and the mafia. So I understand that. But I'm telling you, the way they are now, they weren't like that then.
The AFL and AFL CIO and the Teamsters have been very a number of years backing political parties.
Yes, yes. I'm not going to say
for
that.
For a long time. It's not.
I agree with that, but I'm talking about the money and I'm talking about the access. I think it's much more than it is now. I mean, trust me, I'm not doubting you. Not doubting you about what you're saying. They've always, no, I'm not saying they were teeny weeny and off in the side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, yeah, they were powerful, but I'm saying where they are today is different. Trust me, it's different today. I don't know too many union dudes
that
got total access to the White House whenever you want. Come in
oh,
and be like,
stop,
yeah.
Stop.
And,
stop.
They don't.
Stop. Stop.
Come on. They don't.
Stop. Stop, man. Come on. Stop.
That's
I can't believe you. I can't. Well, let me put it this way. If you want to go that way, then you can. I can also say
I'm not
that
saying he can't. I'm not saying he can't. No, I'm not saying there was something wrong with he can't. I'm just talking about they have that kind of access and power. That's all. I'm just talking about power. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying nothing because there's a lot of people who have access to the White House. I mean, that's just what it is. You got Jeffrey Immelt, the CEO of GE, who paid no taxes from GE at all, but he got total access to the place. I mean, people who got clout can go in there. I mean, if you help and bust your tail, yeah, you become president and I help you bust your tail, I hope I can have access to the White House, too, and talk to you whenever I feel like it and have a beer on the White House lawn. I mean, but I'm just saying, for me, unions don't smell right. And I think Hostess is a classic example of what unions do.
Hostess is not a classic example. I mean, you can spin it any way you like. If they were a part of financial mismanagement, then that's not the classic example of a union sucking the life out of a company. That's the management sucking the life out of a company.
Okay.
And then turn it around and blame the unions.
But that's part of business, though.
But turn it around and blame
right.
the union
okay.
that's the reason why. We're closing the doors because
They said we can't withstand the strike. They just said they can't. So what's the lie? They're not lying. They said I can't withstand the strike. If they've been in bankruptcy twice in the last 3 years, what does that tell you? That tells you they ain't got a lot of they ain't doing that well.
Wait a minute, but if they have financial and operational mismanagement, okay, what's that telling you? That doesn't sound like it's telling you that it's coming from the union workers that are sucking the life out of the company.
Right.
The management is got some issues that they haven't addressed, haven't got rid of the
mm-hmm.
the right people or haven't got the right people in place to fix the problem, and then turn around and say to the union workers, for whatever reason, and I wish I had the exact information what kind of concessions they wanted from the union workers, but they're making them the scapegoats for the whole company closing when they were in bankruptcy twice. So they had problems for years, and now they're closing, and now they want to point the finger at because it's popular now.
Well,
to point the fingers at the union workers and
make them
scapegoats.
Okay, so I give you that. If since they did mismanagement, it came out. That's everybody who loves unions will have. That's the excuse to say, well, they did wrong. Union didn't do nothing wrong.
It's not an excuse.
But for every one of those you can find, I can find you ones around the country that are taking advantage and gouging companies and drying them up. So here's my last soliloquy on it. I don't feel sorry for the workers. I don't feel sorry for the union. If you really cared about the people, you took your asses back to work. You didn't. 18 people lose their job. Sorry for you.
Wait a minute. But Mac, that's the point. That's the exact point I'm trying to make. That you just can't go willy nilly and say you're going back to work. And we're going to give you whatever wage we're going to give you. Whatever benefits we're going to give you, because that's just the way it's going to be.
Okay.
There's a give and take.
Right.
And apparently the company strong arm said either take this or leave it, and that's it. without even, I guess, really going into any kind of serious negotiations. Is that
they did.
This is
the
it.
People said we're not taking the cuts. If I tell you, if Jerry, if you come to me and tell me you need to take cuts on this, and I tell you, hell no, I'm not, and we go out on strike, well, what the heck I'm going to come back with you for? For what? And then we're going through a bankruptcy anyway?
Well, that's part of negotiation. You just don't say take it or leave it and leave it like that. I mean, because everybody hurts from that, including the management of that company, that long-standing company. They hurt. They have families just like the people who are working there have families.
Everybody
takes a cut on that. And it's not right. It is not right that the company is pointing its finger at the union workers saying, making them the scapegoats because the fact is they wouldn't take any concessions.
Well, I doubt that them guys, I doubt that any of those guys were making pittance of money because when I'm looking at one of the articles in here, and one of the guys who's complaining, the baker, is making $17 an hour, as you know, working in the bakery. So I'm sitting there, and he's like, I don't want to take the cut, and he makes $17 an hour. And I'm just sitting there like, really? Like, really? Give me a job where I can make $17 an hour. I take that. $17 an hour? Man, you kidding? A 40-hour work week? Man, I take that all day long. Give me that. But I'm just saying, so what I'm saying to you is I agree. We can agree to disagree, but for me, maybe it's just because I've been through it and I've seen it too much and I've seen all the stuff that goes on, and I, from my perspective, I think it served its purpose for a certain time, and I just think it's passed by. I think it's a dinosaur, and I think now completely different than what it was originally designed to do. And, you know, do I feel sorry about Hostess? Yes, I do. Do I feel sorry for those workers? No, I don't. Do I feel sorry for the union? No, I don't. Do I feel sorry for the company people at Hostess? No, I don't. Because you know why? Because the simple fact is, at some point, somebody has to stand up to the union and say, dude, I'm not doing it. If you ain't going to take it, then we're done. And I, to be honest with you, I just feel like they should have, they're good for y'all. You know, and I mean, maybe that's wrong, maybe that's callous, but it just, it's like, which moves me into my second thing. So I'll leave that because we ain't going to agree on that. But I respect what you're saying. And I respect what you're saying because it's some of the parts of what you're saying I do agree with. But overall, over a whole, I can't stomach them.
17 times 40 is $680. Before taxes.
Okay,
before
but that's
taxes.
But let's see if he was getting paid 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks.
It's still before taxes.
No, you're right. But my fact is, but like I said, my fact is, if y'all was really interested in people going to job, you would have took it and went on and took back the job. You sacrificed and went another route. Anyway, that brings me to my second point. And one of my other articles I put on there, if you notice, is that I put on there about that really disturbs me is that, and it just kind of irked me, is how we African Americans were so focused during the election. And I don't know if you read the article, but social media, you know, pushing. We was just united. We pushed. Get out the vote. Vote, vote, vote. We dug up every article, picture we could, every article we would do for our point, to prove our point. We, you know, some people, not you guys that I know, but were vicious and nasty and pro-Obama and hate Romney. African American as a group was focused. But what bothers me is now, it's funny, I look at Facebook and Twitter, and what I was saying is I'm examining it now, and we do what we typically do. We rah, 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 and then now that Obama's won, as African Americans, we go back to freaking sleep because now we're comfortable. But what really irritates me about us, and yeah, I call us out, because is the fact that we have four dead people, and this is just my opinion. You're not going to like it, but it's what I wrote.
I'm not going to like it, but I'm listening. I'm listening.
But I'm saying that I think we're very. I think we as a group, not everybody. I'm just saying some. When I say as a group, I'm not saying every individual. I'm not saying every African American.
Mm-hmm.
I'm representing us as a group because I can't go name names and say this guy, this group over here, this group. I can't. But I'm saying we as a group have now went silent on social media. Like, we don't care. We really don't care. You, I believe, would care. I may care, older people. But I'm talking about all these people that was talking about vote for Obama, are now not saying anything. We have four dead Americans. I don't see tweets and stuff about that. I don't see any tweets holding the same guy, the president, to the fire about it or answers. I don't see the same vigor and focus and energy we had during the election when it's real issues, which I call real issues, because the real issues are what do you do in the next 4 years. I don't see anybody doing that. You know, it's like, if any one of those four dead Americans would have been black, or one of them, or all four of them, we'd have had a fit. We'd have flipped out.
Oh, no. I can't believe you're going there. The fact is there is an investigation going on about what took place and who knew what and knew.
But they lying
though.
But if I go on Facebook right now and say Obama's lying about it was terrorism or whatever, see, people get mad at me and curse me out, call me names, whatever. He didn't do nothing to make excuses for him. My thing is, why aren't I guess my the thing that irritates me about us is that it's like, we really don't. I mean, I'm being honest, Jerry, I'm being very blunt when I say this. We don't give a flying fuck about what goes on in this country if it ain't got nothing to do with our freaking paycheck, if it ain't got nothing to do with our lives, our job, and our family and me and mine. We don't care. We really don't. Barack Obama can do whatever he wants, and nobody cares. They make excuses for him.
But everything you said here about the pocketbook, about family, about job, that all is wrapped in one, because in reality the president has something to do with that, and people do look at that, and people do care about that. So when you say that, I think you're very, very mistaken about that. I understand your perspective on how you perceive the president to be, and I think that's slanting your opinion, but a lot of people worry about family, pocketbook, jobs, because they deal with that every day. And they also listen to what's happening in the country, because that has to do with family, jobs, and their pocketbook.
Okay. I put on Facebook, for a dead America. Don't see us tweeting about that. Don't see us tweeting about the investigation. Don't see us tweeting about nothing, because we don't care. We don't care.
I don't think it. Come on, I can't believe you're saying that.
The young people don't care. The young ones don't. Our age, we do. We watch the news. We actually watch it. Come on, man. Most black people, most of these young black people, anybody from 40 on back, don't watch the news. These are the same people who didn't even know simple things about our country. My point is, here's my point, what irritates me. What irritates me is the same energy and the same get out the vote, the same energy we had to get the man in. I don't see that same fire in everyday stuff when things come up. Look, the only time you're gonna hear us say something is when if a white person comes out and stands against Obama, then you'll see an occasional tweet, an occasional post about the Republicans don't like Obama, they racist, or this and this and that. That's what you hear. But if it ain't about Obama, and if it ain't about entitlements, or it ain't about something that they feel ungod black power, I gotta say something about it. They're not gonna say nothing. If another five white guys go over in the military and die, Vic will care. But most of the people that's on my Facebook and Twitter don't care. The people that we talk to, the people we look at, they don't care. They ain't tweeting about that. They're not. But they'll tweet about Susan Rice. Why? Because Susan Rice is black. Now the white Republicans are racist and they don't like Susan Rice. Now they stand against Susan Rice. That's when I see a tweet. But I never see a tweet about nothing else. All the other stuff, I don't see nothing. So I'm not, here's my point. I'm not saying all. I'm just saying as a whole, I don't think a lot of we don't. And I'm disappointed because I'm like, these are the same people who was on this joint every day, every minute. And all these did was post was about Mitt Romney and this and that, and this and that. I mean, I saw us on social media. Woo! Man, let me tell you, black folks can do some social media. We can post and find articles and post everything. But what I'm saying is when the real issues come in this country, they don't care. Unless it's got something to do with Obama, and it's a white guy, a Republican, or somebody standing against him, or it's something that they feel like is a free thing or an entitlement that we ain't getting because the Republicans stand in the way, then we hear a tweet. My problem is, why don't I see the same tweets about four dead Americans, white or black? Why don't I see this? Why don't I see a tweet? You know, all I see on my page about tweets is I don't see about unions or about how bad that is about the 18,000 people that got laid off, who some of them probably are black or most of them are. I don't see that. All I hear is I'm going to go get Twinkies today. I'm going to go get some ho-hos today. Really? That's what y'all follow up with now? So for me, like I said, if you're going to have the same energy, my pastor used to say something, and I give it to you this way. The same energy and the same passion that it took me to live out in the life of sin and in the clubs and do the dirt and that stuff that I did is the same passion I'm going to live when I get saved for Jesus Christ. So what I'm saying to you is the same energy that you put into this election and to talk nasty about Mitt Romney and, you know, get out the vote and get your man in and all that stuff, which I admire. I respect that, because if that's your man, you support it, that's fine. That's what this country's all about. But in the same interest, I don't see you tweeting about other stuff that are important to this country as Americans, as a group, not as black or white, but as Americans. Because guess what? Four dead people, I look at it this way. Those four dead guys, could have been one of my relatives that's in there, and I want to find out what's going on with it. And I'm not going to just sit by and be like, well, I'm going to go to sleep for 4 years. My man in, I'm good. I'm going to sit back and belch and fart and put my toothpick in my mouth. My man in, we good now. We cool. But they don't really care.
So this is your mantra now? This is what you're going to hang your hat on? You're going to hang your hat on these four? And I'm not downplaying these four dead Americans, but it seems like it seems to me that you're trying to pick something to chip at
Obama. I'm not chipping at anything. I don't have to chip at anything because it's a fact. Because I watched the news today. I know what happened. I know that General Petraeus went in there and said that the thing said it was terrorism, and then by the time the note got back to somebody, it took it out. I know that. Somebody lied. I'm not saying it's Obama's fault, but what I'm saying to you, if it's not his fault, then what the hell is he the president for? Because I don't understand how a man is the chief executive officer and never knows nothing. Seriously.
Wait a minute. I understand what you're saying, but there's different levels of information that before it gets to the president. If somebody deleted something that before it got to the president, you can't fault the president for not knowing that he didn't what in actuality it was.
Okay,
then,
so let me ask you this.
Wait a minute. Let me finish. Now, there's an investigation that's taking place, and a lot of other kind of garbage is coming out about different individuals doing some underhanded things in their married life or whatever. And so this is one big mess, but sooner or later it's going to get shuffled out, and it's all going to get dealt out on the table of who knew what and when did they know it and what information was not dispensed or supposed to be dispensed to whoever. So, but because it's so muddled right now, it's going to take a while to get through all this, in your terms, shit. So. It's going to take a while. Now, some people are impatient. Maybe you're one of them. You think he should.
No, I think
put the information out right now. But it's,
no, I just think the whole administration is lying. Here's my point.
I knew that was coming out.
Okay, well, let me get to the crux of the matter. Let me say this to you. Okay. I allow that. Okay, take out the marital affairs. That ain't got nothing to do. I'm not blaming Obama for that. Dude chose to go stick his thing wherever he stuck it. That's him. Okay. What I'm saying to you is that, but when you stand in a press conference and say that we, the White House, we, his words, sent Susan Rice out to say what we told her, so don't jump on her, deal with me, but then when we deal with you, you say you don't know nothing, that's crazy. Like, Slim, who sent that chick out to say that? Like Susan Rice didn't write up what she wanted and just come out and just decide, all right, I'm going to go out and just go do this. Dude, the president told her to do that. The White House told her. He said it. So my thing is, why would you come out and deliberately say a lie something that wasn't true about a film. But then when you ask the guy who's her boss, who tells her to go out, who he said he sent out, the White House sent out and go out and say that, why would you go out and have a lady go on 5 talk shows and say false information and say that it had to do with a film when it didn't? Nobody can answer that question. And what we and what happens is people's intelligence gets insulted because it's like, come on, man, somebody did something. Just say who it was. Like, who was it? And to be honest with you, do I believe it was Obama who did it? Of course. Do I believe if he didn't, he knew about it, and he knew it wasn't right? And if he knew it wasn't right, then say, look, I blew it. It wasn't right. But don't sit and say, I don't know nothing, and there's an investigation, and don't jump on her. What do you mean don't jump on her? Like, you put her out there as an authority and told her what to go say, so then when we come to you, you don't know nothing. And even the General Petraeus said today in behind closed doors, the congressmen, people who were there said it, said that he said we knew it was terror from the beginning. In fact, the people that were there today said they saw the film of the whole thing and said that these dudes were experts. They were not no little street dudes doing whatever. They said the truck that was standing in front, Benghazi, whoever Benghazi had watching the front of that, because they couldn't have their own force there, the force that they had there drove off 20 seconds in a Jeep. We were standing outside in front of the gates and drove off 20 seconds before the thing began. And when the dudes came, he said, when you looked at it, they were marksmen. These dudes were experts. They knew where to hit, where to go, everything. He said, we saw the whole thing. He said, these dudes were not no street dudes mad about some doggone fight. These were expert dudes. That's what the congressman said today. And the thing about it is, and they were saying this was not just no movie. This wasn't no movie. It was that. So here's my point. My frustration is common sense. Just common sense would tell you they are lying. Whether it's them, the CIA, whoever it is, somebody's lying. And all I'm saying to you is that I'm saying that, but what Obama said in his press conference yesterday, he got to take some blame then. Okay, what happened? Tell us what happened. But it's like every time you come to it, it's like it's all this stuff. It's muddled. It's this ongoing investigation. And you're like, okay, cool. But, you know, and then people kill me when they talk about 9/11. But when you look at 9/11, all the information came out pretty quick. We weren't waiting months and weeks for this stuff. This stuff came out. We knew somebody flew the tower. We knew what was going on. We told this is what happened. So all I'm saying to you, Jerry, is I think that we need to start being concerned with everybody, not just ourselves. And the same energy we put into pushing the guy into the building, we should take on the same outrage and the same postings and the same stuff we need to do about things that are important. Then this silly stuff that we put on every day on Facebook and Twitter, that's fine. But when it comes down to something important, it's like they don't care. We sleep. You not sleep. Vic's not sleep. People who are older and people who give a damn about the country as a whole, white, whether they're white or black, will say that. But I'm disappointed in that. And that's not, I'm hanging my hat on that for 4 years. And it's not even Benghazi. Because I'm not worried about it. Because trust me. Trust me when I tell you. Trust me. After these 4 years, trust me. I got a whole lot of material. Because trust me, when that Obamacare kicks in, oh, man, I'm waiting. Because like I told my wife, I don't feel sorry for nobody voted for him. Y'all vote for him, whatever y'all get these next 4 years, I don't want to hear a word. Because my mantra for the 4 years is going to be this. Shut up and take it. You asked for it, now you got it. I don't care.
Unbelievable. I mean, you are unbelievable.
I can't feel sorry, but you can't. How can I feel sorry for you when you're? How can I feel sorry for anybody when you made the choice? I didn't make you do it. That's like if I decide to go out and stick up a bank, Jerry, you're not gonna feel sorry for me. You're gonna be like, you dummy. You know you ain't supposed to go stick out the thing. But I endorsed that. I wanted to go do that. So guess what? It's like my pastor saying, you do something. Time passes, and then something happens. You reap what you sow. Every choice, life is choice driven. The choices that you make bring about certain results. And y'all voted for Obama. I respect that. But I know what's coming down the line over these next 4 years, and when it comes out, I'm going to laugh. And I'm going to sit there and go, uh-huh. We told you that was coming. You didn't think that was coming, did you? I can't wait. I'm sitting back in the, yeah, and I'm going to tell you right now, I'm sitting in the bushes waiting on this one. I'm going to watch it all unfold, and I got my popcorn and my pizza and my drinks sitting over there on the counter, and I'm going to be waiting, because when the economic stuff come along and start beating everybody upside the head, ain't going to be me. God's going to look out for me, because I didn't endorse.
Let me ask you something. I mean, let me say this. When Obama first got reelected, you didn't want to say nothing. And then now you're spouting off about Obama, and you can't wait to see what happens coming down the road, because
I already knew it was going to come.
Wait a minute. You're going to get your popcorn ready and all that. Now, wait a minute. How are you going to sound, or what are you going to say if in the next 4 years things are getting turned around? Are you going to say, I told you so? Or are you not going to say, I don't want to talk about it, like you didn't want to talk about him getting reelected? Or what?
But let me just ask you this. Why would I want to? But here's the thing. But see, you equate me not wanting to talk about it as being bitter or mad. That's what y'all thought. Listen to me, but it's not that. No, because you're saying that what your statement just said, you're saying, are you going to say it or are you going to say you don't want to talk about it? Which means that because I said I didn't want to talk about it the last time, you guys took this as I was somehow dodging or ducking the issue. No, what I told you was I didn't want to talk about it because the simple fact is, number one, the reason why I didn't want to talk about it is because there were enough people out there who were mad and outraged and flipped out and bothered about it, saying crazy stuff, being mad and bitter. I wasn't mad or bitter because, let me tell you why I'm not mad or bitter. Because, number one, I'm a Christian. I read my Bible. You reap what you sow. The choice that y'all made, I'm disappointed in it. And guess what? I didn't want the guy in there. But guess what I know? Here's what I do know. This is why I'm not bitter. Because I know that I didn't vote for him. So I know God's going to take care of me, and I'm not going to have to deal with the repercussions of what Obama did because I didn't endorse what he did. See, I know that. Now, that sounds far-fetched. It sounds a little deep, but that's me. But I know that because I've known that all the years of my life. I've always, when I back up what God backs up, I find myself not in the same trouble that other people are. It's been proven in my life, and that's what I see. So I wasn't worried about it. So the reason why I didn't want to talk about it was because, I'm going to tell you one of the reasons why, is because I didn't want to sound like if I didn't say anything positive, or if I didn't go along with what y'all were saying, or say whatever y'all expected me to say, something totally different than what y'all expected me to say, I was going to be labeled bitter, or I was mad, or I didn't like the result. I didn't care, because of the simple fact is I never cared about it to the point where I was like, okay, if Obama gets it, oh my God, life is going to be terrible. I'm going to die. Some people took it that way. I didn't want to sound that way, so what I did was, I elected not to talk about it because, honestly, just being truthful, I didn't feel like talking about it because if this had gone on over a year, I was tired. The election thing, I was like, you know what, let me just chill out, cool down. I've had enough of politics. I'm going to leave a few days. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to see it. And I wasn't watching the TV, really, and I wasn't talking about it. So I left it alone for a while. That's why I didn't say anything. But guess what, if 4 years, things get better and everything goes good, guess what? I don't care. Great. Good for you, good for America, good for everybody. Because, see, it ain't about just me. Yeah, I don't care. If he turns around and everything turns to peaches and cream, we reduce the deficit and all this stuff happens and Obamacare starts taking care of people and does great things, guess what? I'm going to be happy. And I'll be happy to tell you, you know what? He did all right. And I'll be the first one to say that. But guess what? Especially since the fact that I know he can't come back for another 4 years and have a chance to screw it up.
You always got to go with that backhanded slap, but go ahead.
No. But I'm saying I don't have to worry about him no more. Dude, you don't understand. I will be so glad when this whole episode in history is done.
Why? Why?
Because I'm tired of the divided country. I'm tired of the
that's not going to change,
everything,
man.
Is just black and white, racism this, racism that. We don't like him. He's our president. We got a black president. I'll be honest with you. It's easy for you to say that, but you got to remember something. Jerry, we've never had a black president before. So we've never had to deal with, not like this.
Well,
we're dealing with we've never had to deal with before, Jerry.
Because wait a minute. There's where you're wrong. There's where you are. We've been dealing with this.
What black president have we ever had before?
No. Listen
That's
to
what
me.
I'm talking about.
No.
I'm not talking about we ever had to deal with black and white issues. I'm not telling you we've never had to deal with racism. Well, that would be crazy. In fact, I would hang up the phone and get off the phone if I said that. And I would expect you to do that, too.
No, but what I'm saying is this. It's magnified now. And I'm pretty sure you've seen it. There's been a lot more of outright racist things said toward the president because it's magnified because he is the president and he happens to be black. And people think
right.
You all right, man?
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
People think it's okay, and I can't understand why they would think it's okay to say racist remarks about this president.
No, it's not.
Absolutely not, and I don't condemn anybody
who did it.
But it magnifies the amount of racism that is actually out in this country.
Yeah, but we already knew that, though.
Wait a minute. We may have already known it, but it's given an excuse of people who have kept it under wraps to open it up and bring it out to the light.
Right, but we do the same thing though. We do the same thing that everything that the white man's doing. We do the same thing. We racist too. We are.
Well, let me put it this way, Mac. We've learned from the best.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's right. No, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying anything's right. What I'm trying to say to you, Jerry, is this: I agree with you. What I'm saying to you is that, but you're stating the obvious because it's the same thing with us. Let's be honest. Let me. The one thing I've learned about is that pressure shows who you really are. Trouble is who you really are. I've always told people, like I've always told guys, you know, or girl or women when they meet somebody, I say, look, when you meet somebody, I don't care about the happy. I want to see what you like when it's opposition. I want to see what you like when you heated, when you pissed off. That's what I want. I want to see the pressure. That's what I want to see. So what I'm saying to you is that the things that people are saying about Obama and using the N-word and that coon and this I knew that's been there. It ain't never left. In fact, let me give you a news flash. As long as there is a devil, there's always going to be racism, period.
Mm-hmm.
Racism will never leave the face of this earth. It'll never be gone. It'll always be here in some shape or form. In fact, everybody can be racist. Every person, Chinese, Japanese, Indian, we all got it. And all I'm saying to you is I understand that. But what I'm telling you is I'll be glad when this is all, because I've never seen us as divided as we are now. And I don't like it. So I'm not saying it's anybody's fault. I'm just saying it's like you having a bum in your house. The bum stinks and you don't take a bath. You got him in the house. You have to deal with him for a while because maybe a court order told you had to keep him. So now you got to try to bathe him. He don't want to bathe. So what I'm saying to you is that, but when the time comes and the bum gets out your house, you're glad. You're like, it don't stink no more. I don't got to deal with that crap anymore.
Wait a minute, are you calling Obama a bum?
No. What I'm trying to say is the baggage that comes with certain things you don't want to deal with. You get tired of it. You're like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. So what I'm telling you is it's not his fault. So let me make that clear. I'm not blaming Obama for the division in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I knew from day one when it was close to him becoming president, I predicted that this nation would be divided.
Absolutely.
I knew that was going to happen, and I didn't like it because I was like, damn it, I don't want this. But we got it. So I'm fine with that. White people are wrong for doing it. We're wrong for doing it. Oh, man, shoot. Be honest with you. Obama has brought our racism out. If you really want to know the truth about it,
it brought both sides,
white and black. It brought both our racism out because I've never heard the word cracker, honky, racist. Black people call white people so many names because it used to be in the 70s. We didn't like the white. Black people grew up not liking white presidents. We didn't care whether they was a Republican or Democrat. We didn't like them. Period. We didn't. It was always cool. Look at Good Times. Look at All in the Family. Look at those shows and how they talked about the president. It was cool to talk about the president and say little sly remarks about the president because he's white. But you never heard us call white people racist until we got a black president. And
well,
that was
that,
the thing.
It, and this is the question I got to ask you, okay? Mm-hmm. Up until now he's the 43rd and 44th president, and he happens to be black, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't heard any sort of overt racist remarks of any of the presidents up until this point, as much as it's out now because of Obama being the president. Why is that?
Oh, you talking about why is it coming out? Why is it so vicious now as opposed to the first time?
Why is it so vicious? Why is it so accepted, or I wouldn't say accepted, but for most part it is accepted because more and more people are coming out with racist remarks.
But that's because, what are you talking about? Are you talking about on social media? Because ain't nobody got the balls to come up and say it in his face or nothing like that. So you're talking about on social media?
Social media?
Let's be honest. Yeah, but let's be honest, Jerry. Jerry, let's be honest. The people who are saying that are cowards. They're not exactly, it's not accepted, it's just that you can't get them. You can't do nothing to them, so they feel brave. Come on. It's like the guy who talks about what he's going to do to you on Facebook, but if you come to his house and see him, it's a totally different conversation. So,
wait a minute. I guess you hadn't seen the video of this young woman in California that says she wouldn't mind.
Oh yeah, I heard about it.
Obama got assassinated, and she actually went on camera and said she didn't think she said anything wrong.
Right.
That's how overt
do you
racist
understand?
Can you be?
Yeah, but do you not understand? But you got to understand something, Jerry. Jerry. Think about the stuff that goes across social media. Just think about it. I just want you to think about it. Think about naked women. You got guys cussing people
out. I'm not talking
out.
About no naked
you
women.
Got,
I'm talking
no,
about
just,
what we're talking
no,
about right now.
I know. I'm giving you the reason why. I'm answering your question.
Yeah.
What I'm saying to you is it's like I'm trying to give you an example. It's like what I'm saying is it's shocking to you. But if social media people say and put the craziest, zaniest, outrageous stuff on video and on there, you get comfortable. You don't think, what are they going to do to me? I said what I said. I got free speech. I just said what I said on the camera. A high person thinks has a whole different thing. So what I'm saying to you is, I'm saying you're right to be outraged, and it shouldn't have been done. And she deserved to be arrested. She deserved everything she got, period. Ain't no excuse, and I ain't giving her no excuse because that's wrong. And she was an idiot because I ain't got enough. Let me say something. I'm black, and I ain't got enough balls. If I felt that way, to put that out on film and say that, I already know what's
coming. That's exactly what my point
but
is.
Because
now it seems like it's accepted, or it's easier for someone to come out and come out just blatantly say something like that.
Right.
Right. Because he happens to be a black president, and so it's open season. We can say anything we want because I'm white. I mean, come on. I mean,
but
I don't understand that. But
here's the thing. I don't think it's readily accepted, and I don't think it's accepted, and I don't think she's doing it because I don't think a girl that young is thinking, I'm doing it because I'm white, and because it's open season, I can just do it. She's thinking, remember something. What I'm trying to give you a good example. I'll give you a great example. A woman came to me and said, why is it that every time I'm out and these guys walk up to me with their pants down, riding this Hyundai, this dented Hyundai, got no job and want to holler at me, and then talking about, hey, baby, and think I'm going to give them a response. And she's outraged. Like, who? Like, why would a man do? Like, who the hell is this? Like, why would he do this to me? And I sat there and I told her, I said, well, look, you got to remember something. If you can say this stuff and do this stuff, they say and do this stuff to other women, and other women accept it. And if I go through 100 women and they all go, hee, and talk to me and give me conversation, and you don't, and then he calls you a bitch, you get mad and say, well, why are you doing this? Why is this dude even talking to me? Because you don't realize he's already been doing this to other people. He's comfortable. He thinks that's okay. So what I'm trying to tell you about this is that the girl, and I'm not making no excuse because I'm just telling you how people think. If a person can go on, remember, if they can go on camera and say, I hope he gets assassinated, call him the N-word and say whatever they want to say on the camera. Remember, They were comfortable, Jerry. She was comfortable saying that. That's what I'm trying to get you to understand. She don't realize that because it's not, you're saying it's acceptable. It's not acceptable to everybody. It's acceptable to her. She thinks she's doing no harm. She thinks I'm just expressing myself. I'm on the camera. I've done, and obviously she said outrageous or things that maybe people thought she shouldn't have said before. Probably not to this degree, but she's been warming up. And finally she got the nerve saying, hey, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but there's been more and more people, maybe not to the extreme of her, coming out and saying outrageous or doing outrageous things.
Absolutely.
A woman ran over her husband because he didn't go to vote for Mitt Romney. That's crazy.
Right.
That's
right.
Absolutely crazy. Guy committed suicide because Obama got elected. That's absolutely crazy.
Right. And you know what? And guess what? And guess what? I'm willing to bet you dollar to donut that if the election had went the other way, you would have heard the same stories.
No. No way. No way.
Okay.
You know what?
Right.
You know what? Let me tell you something, Mac. And you probably going to dispute this, but we as a people, we as a black
mm-hmm.
people,
mm-hmm.
are more compassionate than I think of any other race in this country, for the simple fact is what we've gone through over the years and had to endure. We're more tolerant people than most of the races in this country, including
the stuff, Jerry, that I've heard, though. That's the point. You haven't heard the stuff I heard the days up until coming up to the election. You haven't heard the stuff that I've heard. Just ignorant stuff. I'm going to move away from this effing country. I ain't going to let no cracker run this country. I mean, people saying some crazy stuff. I'm going to start a riot. I'm going to do such. Now, I'm not saying they would do it, but the
mm-hmm.
thing about it is, there ain't no camera or nothing in front of their face. So you don't
mm-hmm.
see it. But what I'm telling you is both sides, to me, let me say it this way. Whichever way it swung, it was going to be some craziness on our side. It was on craziness on y'all, on the Democrat side. It was going to be on both sides. And there's some crazy stuff on the right and the left. That's why I laugh when the left goes, well, y'all conservatives do da-da-da. I'm like, okay, well, we both do it. I mean, don't point to – that's the problem I have with sometimes with us is that you call out one bad behavior, and I hate it. And then they point to another bad behavior, one person, and say, well, that makes – what they did okay. And I'm like, that doesn't make it okay. Like, stay right here. What I'm telling you is this person did this. I know other people do it, but I'm just telling you, we're talking about this one right here. So what I'm saying to you is that I don't have a problem. Jerry, you're right. I'm not even going to offer an excuse. I'm not offering no excuse. I could care, you know, racism is racism, and it's wrong, period. I couldn't be a Christian and sit here and tell you it's okay for a white person to say that or why it's right for them to feel that way or nothing, because
mm-hmm.
it's not. But that's what kind of bothers me about this whole presidency for these last 4 years and these next four, is because it's something that we've never had before, but it's something that I knew if we did have, this would happen. And I hate that it is happening, because, yes, I am proud of the fact that as much as you may think I loathe or hate Obama, I am proud in this country that we can vote in a black president. And I never thought that I would ever see that.
There had to be some people from a different race, other
exactly.
than the black,
absolutely.
To vote for him
absolutely.
In order for him to get in. So.
Absolutely. I have no problem with that, and that's
mm-hmm.
why I said I'm glad. But
mm-hmm.
at the same time, anybody who thought that this was going to be different, that's fine. The problem I have with us is that, which is a problem I've always had, is that even growing up, I've always had a problem with, I think we as a people, we always say the word, let's move forward. We always say, don't get stuck behind in your past. We always say all those good things, but then it always goes back to, I just think sometimes some of us, not all of us, are just looking for racism, looking for it. We're always looking for it. Like, I've heard people in my class, you know, young people in my class at school talk about how the person follows me around when I'm in the store, but they don't follow everybody else around. That's racist. Now, me, common sense, I go, you know, why do you care? I wouldn't care. Follow me around the store all you want, because I'm not going to steal. It's like my friends I grew up with. I hate the police. Why do you hate the police? I hate the police because I hate them. They always doing stuff. No, you hate them because you're a thief, or you're a shoplifter, or you're a drug dealer. That's why you hate them, because they stop you and get you in trouble and hassle you because you choose to do what you did. If you wasn't doing what you did and was walking up and down the street, that's fine. I got stopped by the police a few times when I was a kid, but I didn't care. Well, what you want to do? What's in your pocket? Nothing. Want to check them? Yeah, come on, check them. I ain't mad about it, but I just find that now
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go
no,
ahead,
I'm saying now to you that may sound strange, but to may sound strange, but you gotta remember my mother raised me that my mother was the type of person that told me, you go to jail, you gonna be there. I'm not getting you out. Because you don't got no business doing that stuff, and if you do it, I'm not helping you. And if a police come to the house and you do all that stuff, that's what you get. Because you shouldn't be in that line of work, and you shouldn't be doing it. People follow you through the store, don't worry about it. You got money, go through the store, go buy what you want. So what, they follow you. Once they find out you got some money, leave you alone. As long as they ain't bothering you putting their hands on that stuff. See, my mother taught me a little bit different. My mother never grew up looking for racism. She knew what it was, and she knew where it was, and she knew what it was. She wasn't oblivious to it, but she just didn't believe in why I got to keep. That's just an ongoing battle of stress that I have to go through because I'm always looking for it. Like my mother always used to say, if you look for trouble, you can always find it. You look for it hard enough, you can find anything. If you really want to find it hard enough, offense or anything else, you can always find it. So for me, I just always felt like if I wasn't doing nothing wrong, I don't care about no police stopping me. In fact I want you to, because I don't want you getting me mixed up with nobody else. You know, and so I understand what you're saying, but I know some people have been hassled, things like that, and you know, some people grew up in a different town than I did.
Well, I happen to not like law enforcement because I've had bad experiences. Nothing that I was doing illegal, but I've had bad experiences with law enforcement just because I was DWB. So driving while and you know what I'm talking about.
No, I get you, and I've had the same thing happen to me too. You know, I've been stopped too, but I've
more
been,
than me, once. More
no,
than
I,
once.
More than once. I have too. But I guess my thinking is just a little different. I've always thought about, I don't know, I've never been scared. I've never had a problem or been scared of the police or never been worried about them doing nothing because I always felt like I wasn't doing nothing. Now, I'll be honest with you. I would probably feel the same way you did if I did something, if I was doing something, or they was just picking on me. When I say picking, what I mean is you stop me, it's the same dude. You know I'm not doing nothing. You're just doing it because you want to. But for me, it was just like, let me see your license registration. Where you going? I'm going so-and-so. Oh, you are? Yeah, so-and-so. When you was out? I don't know when I'm going to be back, but, you know, it's whatever. Oh, okay. All right, well, see you later. Boom, I'm gone. It's no problem. And they check my car and all that. And I want to check my car. Dude, I don't want you because I've seen too many times where I've seen policemen think that you were so-and-so and so-and-so and you got something to do with something. And I want you to understand. You can freely, in fact, a few times I've said, please, you can check my car. Please check my car. You can open the trunk and do all that. I don't got no problem with that because I ain't got nothing. So you can do what you want because I understand. But I understand. Some people don't have the same experience I have. And so I respect that. But
that's why I get highly agitated when I see overt
racism.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I get you.
People
and
blatantly coming out thinking they can say and do whatever they want to say because now we have the top man in our country, the black president, so we can take shots at him because he's black, and that means we can bring out what we really were feeling over these years because now we can direct it toward the president.
But to be honest with you, you ain't going to like what I'm about to say, but to be honest with you, we've always done it. Honky, that cracker, that motherfucker.
You know, let me tell you something, man.
We've done the same thing.
As long as I've been on this earth, I have never used any. God is in my hand. I've never used any of those words.
You probably haven't.
Because the fact is, I treated everybody as a person.
Yeah.
I was brought up that way to treat everyone
as a person. Absolutely.
Don't look at the color. If the
person
treated me right, I treated them right. If
they
came out their face right, I came out my face right.
Right.
Because I grew up in a very mixed community. And so I interacted with a lot of different, especially near military base. So I interacted with
right.
a lot of different ethnic people of different ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Me dealing with somebody who's Hispanic, somebody who's white, somebody who's Asian, somebody who's
mm-hmm.
black, it was no big deal to me because it was just that's just how I was raised. That's
right.
how it just natural to me. So
right.
when I see somebody, when I see especially somebody in law enforcement or somebody in authority doing things because you happen to be a certain color that they may not like and they may not overtly come it out,
mm-hmm.
but they're doing something subtly to harass you.
But let me ask you this question.
Sure.
this question, because I've always
sure.
wondered this about it. How do you know?
Let me put it this way, Mac. In my opinion, you know. You sit there, a person's tone, his look on his face, his whole body language, you know this person does not like you. Not because
okay.
of something they thought you may have done, but because
mm-hmm.
of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the stereotype.
I guess that's
and the stereotype.
Just, yeah.
And the stereotype they have
yeah.
built up in their head
mm-hmm.
or over a period of years. You
okay.
it just comes out.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not one specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a various pieces of a look, tone
mm-hmm.
of voice,
mm-hmm.
and body language. And
okay.
and you just know.
Okay. I've studied people for a long time, and I think sometimes we get the interpretation wrong. But at the same time, it could be right. You know, I've seen some of my friends and people I grew up with that, you know, that cracker don't like me. That cracker don't like you. We mean that cracker don't like you. The cracker trying to get you to do the right thing, and you don't want to do it. Why you know ain't on the other white boys? And I mean these are, but like I said. As I've been now in my grown days, I'll be honest with you. When I was young and when I was a kid and stuff, I didn't say a lot of those things. I said sometimes I would say them to some people, sometimes, but then sometimes I didn't say anything. But in my head, I was always thinking like, "That's crazy," you know. But as I said to me, I see where you're coming from because there's things that I've dealt with that I could have took it that way because yeah, what you say, the tone and this and this and this and that. But I guess I just grew up a little bit different because my mother always taught me that if you weren't doing nothing wrong, it can't do nothing to you. So for me, that was always my power that I ain't doing nothing. So you can do what
you
want
to
do, but you ain't gonna.
You don't have to.
But I understand. But if I had put it like this, like I could have took what put it like this. There were times where a policeman or a teacher or somebody said something to me, or stop me, excuse me, or treated me a little different because of my color. Sometimes I knew, but most of the time I knew I could have took it that way, but I chose not to, or I could have taken it. And a lot of it is probably because of based on my experience. I didn't have the experience of seeing police brutality. I didn't grow up seeing what people see in L.A., the cops do certain things, stuff like that, and to black guys. I didn't go through that. So my experience is a little bit different. So for me, I was more like, yeah, I don't like the way that white guy. I mean, I've had cops that were just plain buttholes, just like talk to me like, la, 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 not cuss me out or say nothing improper. But I knew the guy was like, okay, he just treat me this way because I'm black. But I don't
and you
know.
Think,
I just
and you
always
think
been. But
and
you
think
know
that's
what?
Acceptable?
No, it's not. It's not right. No, it's not right. But I've always believed. But I was always taught. When we say the word, I take offense to that. I was always taught that by my mother, by the priest that helped raise me. Roman Catholic priest that helped raise me, only white guy in the whole neighborhood, in my whole all-black neighborhood, and stuff like that. I was always taught that offense, anger, and how you take something is your choice. because my mother always taught me, how come you can ignore certain people when they say certain things to certain people you can't? And it started to dawn on me after a while when she would call me out on certain things. She was like, you really decided to ignore this person. You made that decision. The person didn't make you do anything. You decided to. And so what I learned along the way as I grew up is I learned to just either ignore things or as long my only rule was, if you put your hands on me, that's something different. You invade my space, we got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, you know, but if you say what you say, yeah, don't get me wrong. There are times I got in a fight about somebody saying stuff like that. But, you know, down the line, as my mother began to call me out on certain things and say, you know, am I a monkey? No. So what you pimps to do in the first world because he called me a monkey? I'm not a monkey. So why would you hit him? If I was a monkey, maybe you have a problem. Maybe you have some reason to hit him, but you don't. So I guess what I'm trying to say is what I learned the most during my child and in my teen years is that we make the decision on how you take something. Somebody can be nice to you and tell you your breath stinks. But if you decide to take it the wrong way and decide that they're telling you that you stink as a whole and you're a bad person, you cuss them out and get mad at them, and then the person's looking at you like, all I was trying to tell you was your breath stinks. So what I'm saying is everything, to me, I think things are choices, how you choose to take it, how you choose to receive it, and you have to decide, what am I going to let bother me and what am I not going to let bother me? So for me, I probably avoided a lot of conflict because I knew what the guy was trying to get. And then I'm the type of person that if you're really trying to get me to do something or if you're trying to irritate me or bother me, I don't give you that power. Then when I catch you or if I see it, then I'm like, oh, no, I ain't giving you that. No, I ain't going to give you that. So then at that point, I give you nothing. And then I find the person renders them powerless because they can't get you. So, like, when a cop stops me, yeah, he talking to me a little rough and gruff. Yeah, I know he don't like me because of that. But you know what? I'm going to piss him off because today I ain't going to be one of the ones he's going to cart off to jail and embarrass and stuff. So, yeah, come on. You want to look at my license? Here's my license. Here's my registration. Want to look at my trunk? Cool, no problem. Look at my trunk. Hey, you want to look at my car? Yeah, go ahead, look at my car. When nothing's done, you're giving back my license and stuff. Have a nice day. Goodbye. Now you just wasted 30 minutes of your time or 15, 20 minutes of your time for nothing. And guess what? I ain't do nothing wrong. Sorry, every black person ain't that. So for me, I just learned it a little bit different. But I respect the people that have gone through something. If your past has been different than mine, I have to respect that. Because guess what? If I grew up the way you did and I went through some of the stuff that other people did, I probably wouldn't feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother taught me to just make choices. Like, she used to hate when I would say, I'm offended. She'd be like, no, you choose. Like, when she said one of the things that gets her the most is when people say, I take offense. She said, what you don't realize, she said, people don't realize what you're saying. What you're saying is, if you're serving up offense, I'm actually going to take it and accept it. She said, why? Why give somebody the power? You accept their offensive words. You accept whatever they're offering you, and you choose to take the offense. She said, that's what people don't realize, the power in their words, that when they take offense, you take an offense. You're actually giving somebody a position to get in your head and live in there and give you all the offense they want, and you're accepting it. You know, so for me, it was always, if you do something, now don't get me wrong, if a cop come up to me and say, hey, nigga, bro, now you want to give me your life, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I stupid enough to get mad and trip out on him now? No, because I'm smart enough to understand he can take me to jail and I can be in trouble. And by the time I get muscle, now they're not going to believe nothing I say. So it's mm-hmm. better for me to play along right now, give you my license, give you my stuff, and then I file a police report. Or I go home and I tell my mother and let my mother handle it. Now, in this day and age, you can't do that as they could do back then because now we got phones, recording these cameras.
Mm-hmm.
We needed back in the 70s. We needed these choices.
Right.
But I'm just saying, when it was really going on, that's when we really needed it. And now, I tell you what really, you know what really changed? What really changed everything with the race thing and the police and stuff like that? You know what really changed it?
What's that?
Rodney King. And I give Rodney King, not to say he himself planned that, but that's when it really got to the point where it was like, oh, shoot, they got us on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shoot. And now you got people who catch people on their iPhone saying, what'd you say? You said what? You know what I'm saying? Now you can catch people saying stuff. So for me, I always, you know, thought that. So, you know me, Jerry, man, I respect you, man, because, you know, your experience is different from mine. And, you know, my mother just taught me a little bit different not to give power. And that's why a lot of times one of the things, one of the greatest gifts that my friends, and you might think this is funny, one of the greatest things that my friends, shut up, one of the greatest things that my friends taught me, one of the greatest things my friends taught me was not to give anybody, not to learn how to give nobody anything. So if a person was trying to irritate you, you don't let them. You take it from them. If a person was trying to do something, trying to pick with you, you took it from them. You take them from them. So you don't let them get what they want, because what they really want is you to react a certain way and do certain things because they want to have fun with it. But when you take it from them, I learned they taught me that people get more frustrated. And they taught me that. So to be honest with you, Jerry, I respect what you're saying about you know, the racism thing and the cops and stuff like that. I just been a person who just, I've always known it's there, but it don't make me mad as it makes most black people. You know, somebody follow me in the store, I don't really care. I got money, I'll buy something. I'm not stealing nothing, so what am I going to be mad at you for? All you're going to do is waste your time following me. And that's just a different way. But that's because I just don't like getting mad and stressed out about stupid stuff, about things that I think are not worth getting mad about. It's not worth me turning around and making a scene and doing all. It's like, man, so what? You know what I'm saying? But to some people, they do that. And that's why I say I think some of us don't realize, but we're always looking for it. Not you, but there are a lot of people out here who are looking for it. You go to McDonald's, I've seen people at McDonald's like, you know, why you give her drink first and you ain't give me my drink first? You know, why? Because she white? And I'm just like, come on, Slim. Really? Like, really in McDonald's? Like, this lady really plotting on you to give your soda to somebody else, and she's white, and she just happens to be white, and you black, and you think because she forgot your apple pie that's racist? Like, come on, man. And to be honest with you, Jerry, there are a lot of us out there that are like that, and I feel sorry for them, because I'm like, dude, like, I mean, I've got some friends that, like, everything is a race thing. And I'm just like, Jesus. Like, dude, how do you, like, you're going to have high blood pressure when you turn 40 and 50 years old. Like, you get mad over, you think everything is a race thing. And, I mean, you got kids now, just like we got white people who are raising racist kids. Same thing, we got black people raising our kids, raising black kids to think that everything is a race thing. I mean, I hear it all the time. I mean, I hear guys tell me, yeah, you know how white folks is. White folks this, white folks this, white folks that. And I'm like, every white folk ain't like that. I'm like, and I'll be honest with you, I told you before, I would have grew up thinking that if I hadn't had somebody in my life that was a white guy, the white man who was a priest, who was taking care of me and raising me to become a man when my biological father didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And my biological father know where I am, where I live, everything. I ain't hear from him. I didn't see him till I was 22 years old. So what I'm saying to you is, you know, we just got to, that's one of the things I wish we would stop doing, is that we would learn to just step back from something and kind of, like, relax for a minute and, like, think about it before we just flick off and be like, oh, you know, it's like, come on, dude, really? I mean, everything is not black and white, and every white person, just like every black person doesn't hate white people. Every black person, every white person doesn't hate black people. And we just got to learn to start giving people a little room and a little chance. Let them prove it first, or at least, I mean, be blunt enough. I mean, I've asked some white guys, you know, how you feel about black people. I've asked people bluntly, like, what do you think about black people? Oh, I think they're good people. Da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, I have misconceptions. Some people have met me and said, after they getting to know me, said, man, I had a total misconception about black people. I thought all of them was this, all of them was this, all of them was that. You know, and then that gives me an opening to try to educate and show them something. You know, so, like I said, I just wish we'd all slow down. But to be honest with you, man, I ain't going to lie. You know, I just be glad when these 4 years is over, man. Really, I just want to get back to where we could talk, where all of us as a group could kumbaya together and talk about the cracker in the White House.
Let me ask you this because it's about 15 minutes before we're going to get shut off here.
Okay.
Would you feel more comfortable if there was a white guy in the White House?
No. I don't care who was in the White House. To be honest with you, I'll tell you this. I don't have a problem really with Obama being in the White House. I just don't like the fact of the way we act about the fact that we have a black man in the White House. I'm kind of ashamed of how we act about it and how we do about it. But yet we're not. But yet our history is that we don't vote. We don't. We ain't involved. We ain't doing nothing until this guy came along, and that's kind of shameful to me, honestly. In general terms, it's kind of shameful that we're looked at as like, wow, 90%. They've never done that before, and it's like, damn, we should be doing this like all the time, you know. But we don't, and that's kind of shameful as an African American. It's shameful to me because we should be more involved in the election process and stuff like that. As a group, we should be more. We should do more. But a lot of times we don't. We don't vote. We don't all turn out. We don't do this. This is the first time we've, and I don't know, I think they said that was a record. The first time we did the first 4 years, like 90.
Well,
you know,
I guess.
Like 90%.
I think.
Like 93.
I think you're going to start seeing, going forward, you're going to start seeing a bigger turnout of whoever voting because of Obama getting elected. You're going to start seeing more women running. You're going to start seeing more Hispanics running.
Mm-hmm.
So it's opened up the rainbow.
But I don't believe
and
but
the
I don't
gender
believe,
even more.
Yeah, but I don't believe. But I don't. But I believe after Obama's gone, I think we're going to go back to sleep like we did. Well, of course,
I don't know about
course,
that. I don't know
of course
about
be
that.
Right. No, I know about that because to be honest with you, if we've never done it in all these years, and the first time we get one that we think can make it, we did it. Because to be honest with you, we didn't even do that. We didn't vote like this when that thief Jesse Jackson and that slickhead dude that called himself a Christian, what's his name? What's the dude's name? Al Sharpton? Yeah, that clown. We
well,
didn't vote like
well,
that for them.
Well, let me put it this way. Those weren't ideal candidates, and it was quite obvious that they weren't. So present president was more
you could accept him more.
Yes, he's more. That's what I was going to say. He was more acceptable across
right.
racial lines.
Right. He didn't have his hair slick. He didn't have his hair slicked back, and he wasn't sleeping with everybody. Yeah,
well,
you're right.
Well, both those guys were polarizing figures. And that played against him. So
right.
I understand that. So
no, I understand that too. But I'm just saying. But I'm willing. And I'll be around that next election. And I'm gonna look at the final numbers. And I'm gonna tell you, Jerry. I'm gonna be like, Jerry, told you. But I just think we're going to go back to sleep. I think there will always be we'll always vote. Not saying we'll just completely be out of it, but I'm just saying I think next election we will not reach 90 or 93. It'll never happen again. Unless we get another which to be honest with you, I don't even know. After this one, I don't even know if another black one going to run again. I predict there will never be another black president. I predict there will never be one. I predict it. I'm serious.
I'm being serious.
If you haven't seen look, it proved my point. I've been saying this, but after the stuff that I heard and the stuff that white people were saying and stuff, like, I was like, man, yo. You know?
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, if a Hispanic worked, I think that would be the next one, would be a Hispanic.
Well, I mean, they're talking about the governor from Florida possibility being a candidate when 2016.
You talking about Marco Rubio?
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Oh, y'all, black folks ain't voting for no Republican. Y'all forget that. That's why I'm saying they gonna go to sleep.
But what I'm saying is, supposedly he's one of those shining lights in the Republican Party that he may be out there trying to get elected. So I mean,
yeah.
You may say, and it, that's. You know, we could go on. We could go on and on for
yeah,
a couple
right.
hours here.
Right.
And this is a problem I have with the other party. They're not inclusive. That's a problem. That's a huge problem. They're not an inclusive party. I mean, you have different groups.
Way. I don't believe we should kiss any minority's butt, I'm just saying, which is what everybody's saying, which is irritating me, because
oh
I'm like,
God.
No, they're not, no, I'm not talking about, you're not, I'm saying this from Republicans are saying this,
mm-hmm.
like, we need to, you know, we need to reach out and do this, and I keep trying to tell them, I'm like, look, I don't think we need to reach out, I just think we need to explain it a little bit better. And I think, but I don't understand how we need to explain it better, amnesty and this other stuff, because I don't understand. Because the simple fact is, it seems real simple to me to explain. You
the
can't
rhetoric.
Come in this country. You can't come across the. You can't come across here. You can't come across. I mean, it's real simple. You can't come across over the border illegally. You have to get in line like everybody else. You have to get a green card. We'd love you to come. You can come. Okay. We would love all you people that have been here with your kids and stuff like that. We'll give you the citizenship. Now,
wait a minute.
But all you people that hear that we're giving amnesty to kids, if you come over here with your kids, we're going to give you a right. Now what you're doing is you're telling everybody in Mexico, hey, in Mexico, all you with them babies and them kids, come on over the border. Like they're not going to do it. Now we've made a promise. Now we got to do that. And now what's going to stop everybody else from coming over? So for me, I don't think it's a non-inclusive. It's just the fact that you can't come over here illegally. And if you're over here illegally, You either need to get in line and come in, and we start taking care of you, and you start paying your taxes and doing all that. Whatever we got to do for the people that's here, that's fine. But at the same time, we need to shut that fence down and shut that border down where nobody else comes over. Now, everybody who's here, deal with them. I don't believe in throwing them out. Deal with them. Let's give them a path to citizenship. Get on green cards. Get on a computer system where we can keep track of all y'all, this and this and that. The ones that are bad, that are causing crimes, and doing rap sheets, get them out of here. That's fine. But all I'm saying to you is that, but here's the thing, but if you say that to Hispanics, including that gay fruity dude that's over there in Congress, which I can't stand, Gutierrez, if you say that to them, they don't want to do that. They believe in everybody should be able to come over the border and we just take care of them. And what nobody's understanding, including us, is that when you start adding people to a country that's already bad economic shape, now you have more people coming over here. Now they're getting more, and they're not coming over here just working and earning cash. They're coming over here and they're getting welfare, and they're getting in-school, in-state tuition to people that already live here, which Maryland voted for, which there's a bunch of idiots. And then you got people coming over here getting benefits and things that are not legally getting them. So that's what I just told you is very simple. We want you here, but you got to do it the right way. Now, the way I don't understand any other way you could explain that, but I mean that's the only way I know to explain it, Jerry. That's
well,
all, I mean. What other way are you supposed to do it?
That,
I can't put
that. That's only one issue. When I tell them they got to be more inclusive, now you cannot tell me. You cannot tell me that the rhetoric that's coming out of the Republican Party is not friendly toward minorities.
Look, let me say this to you. If you're asking me, do I agree with what Mitt Romney said the other day on the conference call? Yes, I do. Because let's be honest. Everybody, now here's
what?
And I'm going to just tell you my experience. I'll tell you what part I agree with. Let me tell you what part I agree with. The part I agree with Mitt Romney said is that it is free stuff. But somehow people get pissed off because they're like, I don't like that. But look, let me tell you something.
Give me a break.
Most of the people who were voting for him because they wanted Obamacare. They told me all their stories about I got these friends, I got this family, they can't get no insurance from pre-existing conditions, and they want to have coverage. Okay, that's free stuff. They're not paying for it. We're all paying for it, and we're a broke country. But you want them to be on that.
So
if we go broke. So you're telling me
because they voted for Romney because they voted for Obama because he's going to give them free stuff. Is that what you're telling me?
Let me ask you, what are entitlements?
Come on, man.
Who pays for entitlements? Stop.
I can't believe that
Jerry,
you're coming out
not,
and you
Jerry,
buying
not,
and you and you buying
it's
into
not,
that.
It's not buying into that. We got over 50% of this country is getting a government check. I understand some people are getting it legitimately, but the thing about it is there's a lot of fraud and waste, and the government's not going to cut, and they're not going to cut it. They're not going to do anything about it, and it's wasting.
Hey, wait a minute. I got a question
for you. And most
of
the people who voted for them are because they're getting it. I know people that are getting disability checks that got right minds.
They're not even disabled. So you're telling me that Obama said that single women and minorities were promised
free contraceptive and Obamacare.
Free stuff. So that's why Obama got elected. because
I'm just telling you. But I'm telling you.
Wait a minute. Most of the majority of people that are getting benefits from the government are white, not minorities. They're white.
Okay.
That's a fact. So when you make that statement,
right,
you're totally misleading.
Wait a minute, when you make that statement,
I'm talking about
right.
Mitt Romney. When you make that statement, you're
right.
perpetuating the fact that all minorities or the majority of minorities are getting free stuff. And basically, you're saying that all minorities are getting free stuff and white people got to pay for it. That's what you're saying.
No.
That's what you're saying.
No, I'm saying this country's got to pay. I never said that. I said this country has to pay for it. And
I didn't
won't.
Say that. You said that. He's saying that. That's what I'm telling you.
Okay, well, I mean, that's what you assume. Unless he's saying white people, unless he used the words white people are paying for it, I mean, that's your assumption.
Come on, Matt. Any intelligent person knows
right.
when you're insinuating that mm-hmm. Pointing a finger at one particular race.
No,
you're
he
saying,
said Hispanic. He said Hispanic minority, right? Minorities, which is Hispanics, blacks,
right?
He's saying they voted for free stuff.
But the majority of the people that are getting these free benefits
mm-hmm.
are white. That's a fact. That's a
okay.
statistical fact.
But that still doesn't mean. But the thing is, there's still a lot of fraud and waste.
Regardless, you're missing the point.
I understand what you're saying. You take it from him because he's white that's what he's saying. What I'm saying
is absolutely.
Right.
Because of fact, he's saying the minorities. This is what he's saying. He may not completely going out and said it, but subtly he's saying it. The minorities voted for Obama because
sure.
he promised them free stuff.
With women, they all were pissed off because Mitt Romney, because what did they push on the commercials? He's going to take away your reproductive rights, and you're not going to be able to get abortions when you want, and you're not going to be able to get, wait a minute, who nobody pays for, we pay for it as a country. Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood. Then you got free contraceptives, which is guaranteed in Obamacare. Fine. Then I hear people on Twitter and Facebook, black people talking about he sees our plight, he gonna help us, he gonna give us this or that or whatever, whether it's no work requirements for welfare, all these things. I can't remember all the things, but what I'm saying is it all leads to entitlement. Now, I had never heard the day. I don't understand how the word free stuff infuriates people because, to me, entitlements are not paid for individuals. We as a country pay for it, which we can't afford to keep paying for people who are not really needing it. And to be honest with you, it is a fact, a government fact, statistical fact, that entitlements are the biggest, our biggest money that we pay for in this country, and it is also the biggest areas of fraud and waste, Medicare, Medicaid, welfare. So what I'm saying is it is free stuff because the individuals who are getting it are not paying for it.
What's disingenuous is saying that Hispanics and blacks voted for Obama because he promised them free stuff when the statistical fact is that the majority of the people that you say is getting free stuff are white. They're white. They're not black,
okay.
But you're pointing the fingers at the minority saying it's on them. It's not
All I can say is 71% of the Hispanics was the vote that carried him in, that, ca- that